Welcome back to Copper Country Today. We are brought to you by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic and by the members of the Copper Country Education Association. I'm Todd Van Dyke, and on my segment of the program this week, John Heisler joins me. John, of course, a member of the Houghton City Council, but more importantly, in regards to this morning's presentation, the Hancock City Council. I already screwed up. See, we were talking about the one screw-up that you found in your book here, John, and I've already screwed up the interview. Good morning.
Good morning, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
That would be the Hancock City Council, because we're talking about the history of Hancock this morning. This is a new book that has come out that John's been involved with putting together. It's called Images of America, Hancock. There's another book in this series that deals with Keweenaw County, and Sam Ali talked with the author of that book a few months ago here on the program. How did you get involved with this series and putting together this collection of images for Hancock?
Well, it started with my involvement with the sesquicentennial, the 150th anniversary of Hancock, which we celebrated all through 2013, which you were certainly very helpful in helping us promote, which we're thankful for. So that's what deepened my interest in history of Hancock. And then this just kind of fell into my lap. Glenn Anderson, Hancock City Manager, received an inquiry from the publisher that said we would, and I think it's been probably sent to many municipalities around the Copper Country, we would like to do a book on your area. Can you give us a suggestion? Who could do this? And Glenn contacted me and said, what do you think? Who would like to do a Hancock book? Who would like to do a Hancock book?
And John goes,
who would like to do a Hancock
book? Mr. Cotter, right. me.
So eventually I thought about it for a while, and then I had one of my friends kick me in the pants and say, why are you looking for someone to do this? Just do it. You just did. You know, you've got all the history from the last year that you've been researching and all your friends have been researching. Just follow up and expand on it. So it was a very fun project, but it was ready-made. We didn't go to them and say, how about doing a book? They solicited a book for Hancock, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, this company is called Arcadia Publishing, and they have put together a number of books, not only for the Copper Country, but all across the country.
They've told me that there's over 4,000 in just the Images of America series alone.
Wow. So Hancock, do we overlook Hancock when we talk about the history of the Copper Country? I mean, the first thing when you talk about Copper Country history, you think copper mining. And then you think Calumet and Hecla Company. And then 20th century, as you get later into the 20th century, you think Michigan Tech and all of the things that go on in Houghton. And, of course, Houghton is the county seat, so a lot of things happened here. The courthouse is here. Does Hancock sometimes get a little short shrift here?
In a historical sense, absolutely, yes. Larry Langton, who is a very well-known local historian, gave a talk during the sesquicentennial last year in which he very rightfully said Calumet is historically the leading community of the Copper Country. If you want one community that was super thriving, where things were happening, Calumet was the leading community in the history of the Copper Country, but you know that was over 100 years ago when Calumet was at its peak.
Yeah.
And then he said, you know, well, we'll let Hancock and Houghton duke it out for who was, you know, over time the second most important community in the Copper Country. A lot of people don't remember, or maybe just don't know because they haven't dug into the history. Hancock really was the gateway to everything north, and in some sense still is. But back when everything came in by boat and everyone had to come up Portage Lake, there was no bridge. You know, in the early copper mining days, there was no bridge connecting Houghton and Hancock. That didn't happen until 1876. So up until that point in time, you either came in at Copper Harbor or down to Eagle River. Those were ports to come into, or you came into Hancock. And as things grew and as more mining took place on Copper Island, Hancock and North, Hancock was the port of entry. It was really the place everyone came in. They docked at Tuscuco Street. If you had goods that needed to get to Calumet, people that needed to get to Calumet, anything that needed to go north, they came through Hancock. And that happened even after the bridge was put in place, and then there was rail put on the bridge. Again, Hancock was kind of a major – it was a major in our own little nook of the world. It was a major port city.
Yeah, port of entry for things coming into the Copper Country. And the copper mining – south of the portage came late in the history of copper mining. The big mines, the Copper Range mines, didn't really open up until the late 19th and very early 20th century, as opposed to Copper Island, the mines in the Copper Harbor, and then Calumet and the Quincy mine and the Hancock mine. Those were going much, much earlier.
Oh, absolutely. And so when you think about, you know, we live in a county that has two cities, Hancock and Houghton, and certainly a lot of villages and townships. But when you think about the history of the two cities, and Houghton being bigger than Hancock today, go back in time, during the heyday of the copper mining, before Michigan Tech was the big employer here in the western UP, before it was the kind of the king of the local economy, so to speak, Hancock was always bigger than Houghton, and certainly, I mean, I'm biased. I live in Hancock. I love Hancock. You know, I think back 100 years ago, Hancock was more important than Houghton. And certainly in the 19th century, I think Hancock was more important than Houghton. It was the first city. Houghton didn't become a city until many, many years later. I was surprised how late till Houghton received its cityhood. So it was a very different times back then. And Hancock had a lot more thriving business as far as it wasn't known as kind of the community where that has all the services today, where you can go and have your insurance and this and that and the other thing. It had a much more active business community, particularly with merchants, leading merchants of the area.
That was one of the first things I noticed as I went through this. And this book is about 50% pictures and 50% text and some great photos of the early days of Hancock and then into the 20th century a bit. But the first thing I noticed as I was going through was, wow, look at the diversity of the merchants here. Bakeries, shoe stores, the kind of things that we don't see in any of our towns anymore. But boy, Hancock had a really diverse business community.
It had a diverse business community, and it had the numbers were staggering. I mean, you know, we have bakeries, we have shoe stores, but we certainly don't have them at the number we had them in the past. And the general mercantile businesses, it shocks me how many of them. I mean, you have huge mercantile businesses, general merchandise, right across the street from each other, almost on every block. And they somehow all managed to survive for decades.
And grocery stores here.
Yeah. You've got a saddle maker here, a saddle maker there, a harness maker. This guy makes buggies. It's like, how did all of them? There must have been so much demand in the growing community that so many people could be in essentially the same industry or an overlapping industry and all survive within the same community as businessmen.
Because, you know, many of those types of businesses don't exist anymore.
Exactly.
But, you know, corner drug stores, you see pictures of all of those. You know, like I said, the grocery stores, the number of grocery stores, there is what, one in Hancock now? Pat's up on the hill.
Monticello's is closed.
Yeah. So you're down to one. And you have to drive to get to it. It's not one that you can walk to from most neighborhoods in Hancock. And that probably is the key to a lot of this, that 100 years ago, most people were still walking to do business.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about, if you go back, let me, right to the turn of the century, when the Houghton County Traction Company was starting, that's, you know, right around the 1900 was when the streetcar system was coming into place. And the streets were actually being paved as part of that. I mean, think in the late 19th century, I would imagine it was a pretty muddy place to walk through, even though it was a heavily traversed area downtown.
Not to
Hancock.
Mention the occasional droppings of the many horses in town. It must have been a mess.
It must have been a mess. Well, we've always had a strong DPW at the community, and so they can, you know, that goes back 150 years.
Yeah. The second thing that I noticed, and I've noticed this before in looking at pictures of the copper country. I mean, today I sit here in the radio station, I look out my window, and I see Quincy Hill out on the other side, and Quincy Hill is starting to turn color. The beautiful leaves are changing. Hancock is a wonderfully well-treed city. 120 years ago, it was bare as could be.
Oh, yeah. And that was true of most copper country municipalities, yeah, particularly where the mining took place. I mean, they needed the lumber for virtually everything.
Yeah, they needed it to heat homes. They needed it to build homes. They needed it for the copper process, the early smelters, before they started bringing coal in. They heated the copper up and smelted it with wood, and the whole peninsula was almost denuded because of this. But it is so odd to look at those pictures. They're stark.
They are. People who've never seen them before sometimes look at a picture of the hillside either on either side of Portage Lake and say, what happened there? Was that after a huge fire? Was that after some type of natural disaster? And we say, no, that's what it looked like. All the little tree stumps laying around.
Yeah.
That was an everyday facet of life in that era.
Yeah, I mean,
you didn't see trees.
A tree was a resource only if you were cutting it down and using it for
something.
And it stayed that way for a long time. I mean, as I look at these pictures, I see some of these dating back to the 1880s, some of them into the early 1900s, and I don't see the trees growing back the way that I kind of would expect. I would at least think I'd seen some scrub trees, but they must have been chopping them down as soon as they grew.
That I don't know, but it certainly seems plausible. You know, it seems like it really took to the end of the active copper mining era probably to start replenishing the trees in the area.
Well, yeah, and when they started smelting with coal, obviously that lessened the need for the trees. When we started heating our homes with things other than wood, that obviously made a difference too when they started bringing in natural gas and propane and things of that nature. John Heisler is my guest. We're talking about his book in the Images of America series, Hancock, a lot of wonderful pictures and great well-researched text as well, so that it's not just a matter of looking at the picture and saying, oh, gee, what was that? Was it tough as you looked at some of these pictures to track down what that was?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was some pictures that just literally stuck in my mind for weeks, or if maybe even months, trying to find what is really happening here. Some of my friends who've helped greatly on the book, and you can read the acknowledgement section, there's a ton of people. The whole community helped me out in researching these things. But the one I remember most is Lakeview Station. It was the passenger depot. Where was it? You know, and I've gone around Depot Street in Hancock trying to find the ruins. Was there any ruins here? Could we tell where the footprint of the passenger depot was? And why does it look like it's down on the waterfront in this picture? Why does it look like the same building? Do they build two buildings of the same identical nature? And then I finally stumbled into something that told me when Mineral Range was taken over by Duluth South Shore and Atlantic, DSSNA, they moved the passenger depot.
Oh, yeah.
So now I finally reconciled where it was. It was on the base of Tuscuco Street for, you know, most of the 1890s. They moved it up to what is now Depot Street in Hancock in the late 1890s. Then they built a new one in 1916. So I was looking at, any time you look at a post-1916 picture, there's some nice aerial pictures from the 1920s. You're like, well, wait a minute, that building doesn't have the same shape. That's not right. What is wrong? They built a new one.
So where did the name Tezcuco Street come from?
That remains a mystery.
Must have been some fascination with things Mexican.
Montezuma.
Excuse me, at some point, yeah, because we've got Montezuma, we've got Tezcuco. In the middle of all of these Finnish things that we have up here, we have these two Mexican street names. Someday that can be your next book.
I'm very curious because obviously we have Montezuma both in Hancock and in Houghton.
Yeah.
And we have Montezuma Park right across from City Hall in Hancock. And I've always, during the sesquicentennial, there's certainly some thought. I'm a big proponent of trying to figure out what did Montezuma do for the copper country, because if we can't find anything that Montezuma contributed, why not change that to something like Moylan Park?
Well, yeah, big
something,
Louie.
Right?
Yeah.
Why not do something that obviously people could recognize locally, historically? Because I've yet to find anyone who can tell me what Montezuma or what the connection with Tezcuco is.
There must have been some fascination, and whether it goes back to, I don't know, probably it wouldn't go back as far as the Mexican War. I know in Kalamazoo County, where I spent most of my life, there is an Alamo Township and a Texas Township. Well, they were formed during the Texas independence fight, and there were people there who were admiring what was going on, and so they named them after them. So there must have been some event that was going on that people here were looking at with some kind of fascination or admiration, and they decided to commemorate it by naming some streets after it.
Well, you know, I wonder if it goes, Todd, back to Sam Hill, and Charlie Eschbach is our local Sam Hill expert, and Sam Hill platted Hancock, and he certainly had a crew. I mean, he had it would have been people working with Sam Hill, who was the agent of the Quincy Mining Company in 1859, but clearly, they named Tiscuco Street Tiscuco in 1859.
Yeah, so you've got the first plat map.
Someone was a fan.
Yeah, you've got the first plat map for the village of Hancock sitting on page 11 of the book, and there it is. It is Tiscuco Street running up from Water Street. So, yeah, you're right. It goes back to day one.
It goes back to day one. So if it wasn't Sam Hill, it would have been someone else in employ of the Quincy Mining Company in the 1850s that had some type of fascination that did that. I can't. That's the only thing I can think of, is because it came from the Quincy Mining Company for sure. Someone affiliated with it.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody affiliated with the mine had some kind of history with the Mexican War or something like that.
And if I can expand really quickly,
sure.
We're talking a little bit about the Quincy Mining Company. What a lot of people don't realize or don't stop to take a moment to reflect on is most of the Quincy Mining Company's activity didn't take place in Hancock. It took place in the township. If you look at the municipal lines, very little of Quincy's work took place in the city. So I don't have a whole lot in the book on actually Quincy's operations, although they did have a tram line. They had a stamp mill down on Portage Lake in Hancock. When the stamp mill moved, they put a pumping house that's down there now, which is actually still in existence. It's M&M Power Sports, and that's what they used to pump water from the lake up until Quincy Hill. But the actual mining operations, where the shaft houses were and everything, were not in Hancock proper, and which is interesting. And there's, you know, Hancock wouldn't have existed without the Quincy Mining Company, albeit Quincy mostly operated outside of Hancock. Hancock was kind of adjacent to their operations. Of the streets, particularly in East Hancock, are named for prominent people in the history of the Quincy Mining Company. So there's a very strong connection. But you know, there's no Quincy didn't do any underground work, or I'm sure they explored and decided this hill that Hancock, that the community is going to be set on, isn't going to produce copper. We're going up to the top. We're not going to do it here where we're going to put homes. And the Hancock Mining Company had several iterations and never were successful.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next comment. There was a second mining company in Hancock proper, so to speak, but it never really did all that well.
And you know, if you look back on it now, and I think a lot of historians have kind of speculated, Quincy probably explored Hancock proper and decided this is not a productive area. Yet someone still was willing to keep trying and trying. And there were several groups. There were two groups in the 19th century, and then a third group organized in the early 20th century that tried for the last group about 15 years. And they actually included a second location up at elevation in Ingott Street. And they worked within the community, but they are not a success story in the history of the mining companies of the Copper Country. None of the iterations of the Hancock mine would be considered a success story.
No, and there was a shaft basically where Finlandia University is now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Finlandia has completely grown up around the original location of the Hancock mine.
The third thing that I really noticed as I went through the book was the word fire. We don't think so much about fire these days, and that's a credit to building codes that we have and sprinkler systems and the wonderful volunteer fire departments we have with millions of dollars worth of equipment, so that if a fire does get started, they get to it and they put it out in very efficient fashion. But time after time, I looked through here and I thought, gosh, what a beautiful building. I wonder what happened to that. Oh, destroyed by fire on such and such date. Oh, destroyed by fire, burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was one major fire early in Hancock's history that pretty much wiped out the town.
1869, April of 1869, wiped out certainly about 75% of the physical structures in Hancock. Great effort from the community to rebound so quickly. Imagine losing three quarters of the buildings in your community in one day.
And at a time when insurance was not common.
And the story reached all the papers in predominantly in New York, but probably also around the Boston area, because that's where the insurance companies were. Oh, my goodness, we've lost. But certainly they weren't insured anywhere near what it would cost to rebuild. So in 1869, there was a huge fire. Probably the second – there were lots of fires that took down various buildings, one or two here, one or two there. The second really big fire was in the 1920s that took down a big section of the 200 block of Quincy Street.
And the $200,000 fire.
The famous $200,000 fire. A whole bunch of buildings that at that time in the 1920s were historically significant because they dated back to the 1870s, 1860s, were lost in that fire. 1937, everything with St. Patrick's Catholic Church burned. The church, the school, the rectory. I mean, the whole thing was a loss. Across the street from there, the Kauf block in the 40s. I mean, they're still, you know, we lost a historic church as late as the 1990s in Hancock. And then,
sure.
Of course, you know, we had a terrible fatal fire only 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Hancock has been very – we have a great fire department. We've been very unlucky in over our 150-year history with fires.
And the one building that I wish I could have seen – the Carriage Theater, which burned down, and don't you wish that resource still stood in Hancock today?
Absolutely. I mean, look at how popular and how important to the community, you know, the Calumet Theater is.
And the Carriage was a direct competitor to the Calumet Theater.
The Carriage was certainly in its day on equal footing with the Calumet Theater. I mean, they were both built. Calumet was built first, the Carriage was built very shortly thereafter. Just tremendous array of stars that came. And, you know, the Scott Hotel was built shortly thereafter.
And right next door.
I mean, what a great idea to, you know, I mean, take advantage of everyone who's coming to the Carriage Theater. But that was Hancock's real big drawing card, the Carriage Theater, all the way up until it burned, is my understanding. So.
Are there other – I mean, sure there are, but what other buildings that you picture in here do you wish that you could have had a chance to walk through?
I wish I could have seen the original Elks Temple that was at reservation in Hancock, kind of near where the Holiday Station is now. It just looks like a fabulous, beautiful building. Certainly all the early churches that are gone, I would have loved to have seen them. I would have liked to have seen – the original Masonic Hall, which is at the site of where the current, you know, the Masonic Hall, which is undergoing some renovation now and actually will be a historic building that's preserved and saved. But that was a huge, in all of the 1860s, 1870s pictures, certainly the 1870s pictures, you can see this three-story Masonic Hall dominating Hancock Street. I would have loved to have seen what that looked like in its day. We still have a lot of historic buildings in Hancock, but
yes,
it's true that a lot have been lost.
I would have liked to have – if I could be transported back in time, I would like to go to the Hancock Driving Park back in its heyday when the races were going on there and the circuses were coming in town. You found a couple of really great photos of elephants parading through Hancock when the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus would come to town.
Oh, yeah. There'd be elephants on Quincy Street. Yeah, that's fun. And a lot of people don't know that the name of Driving Park originates from the fact that it was a horse track.
Yes.
And you know, with the horse track where you're driving, I don't know what they're called, the carriage. You know,
Sulkies. Sulkies, yes.
Yeah. And so there are some. There was a great picture that was just way too wide to include in the book of a high school football. Two teams, I think it was Houghton and Hancock, lined up on the football field at Driving Park, about 100 years old, and you could actually see, you know, someone riding in a sulky in the background around the outside of the track, around the outside of the football field, mm-hmm. And that's why Driving Park has always been Driving Park.
Driving Park.
For the horses, driving the horses.
Yep. Michigan Tech played some of its early football games there.
They did.
Parades, homecoming parades, went right through downtown Hancock all the way over to Driving Park so that they could play. Of course, we're celebrating homecoming this weekend and such. John Heisler, my guest here on Copper Country Today. The book is Hancock Images of America. Now that it's published and out, John, where can folks get it?
Pretty much any bookstore in the Copper Country. You know, the Images of America series again, has, I think, over 4,000 titles in it. It's a very well-branded. The publishing company's done a really good job of branding it. They're very recognizable. They all have exactly the same format and very similar looks to them. Most of the bookstores, I'd be happy to name some if you want me to, but most of the bookstores in the Copper Country carry this series, particularly if it's anything to deal with the Western UP. So
now that you've got this one done, you have plans for another book or a follow-up?
You know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that there's a possibility for volume two. You really need about 200 or more publishable images. I'm probably about 25% of the way there, and I've already had a few people say, oh, I love your book, but you missed this. You didn't get a picture of this. And so there's a lot of things I'm looking for, and some of the things that I didn't find in the first book, I wanted more pictures of East Hancock, the East Hancock homes. Yeah. And I think, say, for maybe going door-to-door through there, I don't know if I'm going to...
If somebody has a photo that they'd like to contribute, how do they get in touch with you?
Please contact me. 483-0144 is my home phone. I'm in the phone book. I'm easy to find. Hard to spell, but easy to find. Anyone who has interesting pictures of early pictures of Hancock. And this book is predominantly pre-1940. If there were to be a second volume, we could certainly add some later pictures as well.
All right, John Heisler, thank you for being my guest on Copper Country Today.
Thank you so much, John.
And we'll be back with another program next week.